Mr. Yuji Krishnamurti, since you don't believe in traditions, you don't believe in mind, you don't believe in existence of soul or any so-called internal human being, let me start with the first question. Why do you follow the tradition of keeping a name? Why do you carry a name? Why do you identify yourself as U.G. Krishnamurti? Because this is also part of a tradition.
Yeah, that is true, but you can give me, like a prisoner, some number. And many of the people who think that they are enlightened people, and those who give up, you see, and become sannyasins, they also have a new name. What actually happens when you don't use the name that is given to us by our parents, you have to develop a new kind of an identity there. So what is important for us is to maintain the identity. So when people ask me the question, what's your name? It takes a little time for the computer to come up with the name U.G. Krishnamurti. Since Krishnamurti is a very common name, and there were so many Krishnamurtis living at the time when I lived in Adyar, we all decided to use the initials U.G. So that is why everybody calls me U.G. Even my children call me U.G., my daughter and my son.
But you see, naming is a very part of very complicated tradition. Krishnamurti itself, denotes many things.
That is
true. It denotes Krishna, it denotes its incarnation, it denotes so many things. So why do you keep that name? Why haven't you changed it when you challenge so many things?
As I said a while ago, it doesn't make any difference whether I call myself Krishnamurti or use a number. And now it's a lot easier for these computers to deal with numbers than with the names. So you have a bank account with a number, home address with a number, your telephone number. It's a lot easier for the computer here to deal with the names than with the numbers than with the names given to us. And to me, the tradition is nothing but unwillingness on our part to change with the changing things. Things are changing constantly. So we are not ready to change and move along with the changing things in our life. So we call it tradition and cover it up to feel good about it, that we are all very traditional people. So you just have to give a number, you see, instead of a name. Then the story begins. You have to create an identity there again with the number instead of the name. So it doesn't really matter whether I call myself Krishnamurti, 48592, or any other number.
Fine. It seems you do not believe in philosophy, or you do not agree with the meaning of the word philosophy. Say that you do not have anything to give, anything to convey. In that sense, what should others call you? A philosopher, a revolutionary, a thinker, or what? What would you like yourself to be termed as?
No, I have the same problem. They ask me the question, who the hell are you? So my answer is to satisfy them. I tell them that I'm a philosopher of some sort. You know the meaning of the word philosophy is a philosopher is a lover of wisdom.
That's right.
I am the luckiest man who has found that the totality of wisdom has a stranglehold on the people. And we are brainwashed to believe that there is something extraordinary about the totality of wisdom that is passed on to us from generation to generation. And my favorite way of dealing with that is we have been brainwashed for centuries to hold on to the great wisdom traditions that have been passed on to us from generation to generation. Because if you change your diet, you think you will die. That's one of the reasons why we give tremendous importance to wisdom. And as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't mean a thing to me.
Wisdom doesn't mean a thing
to me. So people ask me, who the hell are you?
You can't be a philosopher.
I say that I am a philosopher of some sort. Mm-hmm. And I have always this problem when I go on radio program like this or on television. They ask me the question, who are you? Where the hell you are here? You have nothing to offer to the individuals or the world at large. My interest is to put across something which has happened to me, something extraordinary. And I know well that this is something which cannot be shared with others because this is
not... When did it happen?
I don't know. I wish I knew. But something hit me.
Why did it happen?
Because all my life I wanted to discover the self, find out the self. And the demand to bring about a change in me obsessed me. All my formative years and later on, this question haunted me.
But self sounds something like a soul. I mean, you're talking about something eternal, aren't you?
No, nothing. You see, you know the meaning of the word self. You see, it's
body,
spirit, you know. It's a Latin word. I don't want to deal with the etymological meaning of the word spirit.
But surely, self doesn't mean the body.
But If there is nothing there other than this physical organism functioning with an extraordinary intelligence of its own. So if anybody who is interested in finding out if there is any spirit, if there is any soul, if there is a mind, if there is a psyche, it doesn't matter what name you use, or if there is an identity there, if there is an I there, how do we go about? The only way to go about is you have to free yourself from everything everybody has said before about this. What you see there is created by you. So the demand to fit ourselves into a value system created by our culture is the one that is sapping out a tremendous amount of energy. And so we are not able to deal with the living problems. So the demand to fit ourselves into the value system is the cause of man's tragedy. And there is no point in replacing one value system with another value system. That is what you call revolution. That is what you call by fancy names. But revolution, to put it in my own favorite way, is to replace one value system with another value system. So the question...
But value is a very subjective term. Whatever you are saying can be termed as a value system in itself.
I don't think they can make anything out of this and... and turn this into a model. That is why I am asking people, for goodness sake, don't turn me into a model. We have had enough models.
Can I term you as a follower or as a propounder of Charvak philosophy or Lokayat philosophy? It's a very old philosophical system used to be in India.
That is not... an appropriate way of caging me into...
Oh, well, the Charvak used to say, Yavat jivet sukham jivet, ranam kutva ghatam pivet, bhasmi bhutasya dehasya punaragamanam kutah.
I don't recommend that kind of a thing to the people, because everything we are doing is a pleasure movement. Even the beauty you are interested in, the music you are interested in, is nothing but a pleasure movement. So I am not against a pleasure movement at all. I want people to understand that...
You are not against Charvaka's philosophy.
I am not against anybody saying anything. Okay. What I am interested in pointing out, and to use my favorite phrases, to spotlight it and focus it, for them to get the hang of what I am trying to say. What I am trying to say is a very simple thing. There is no way you can figure it out. It's not that I am trying to mystify this and making it difficult for people to get the hang of what I am trying to say. But I want to leave those listeners, the viewers, and those who come to see me with this impossibility of figuring out what I am trying to put across. And so in that situation, something extraordinary can happen to the individual. And he will be surprised to find out that at once this stranglehold of everything that is taught to us, everything that we felt, everything that we experienced before, cannot manipulate these bodies, cannot force the actions to fit into a particular pattern or a particular value system. Unfortunately, the whole value system is born out of the assumption that we have great spiritual teachers and we have turned them into models. So the whole energy is consumed by that demand and our effort to fit ourselves to become copies of those models. So we don't have the guts, we don't have the courage to brush them aside. Unfortunately, there is no way you can brush them aside, no way you can free yourself from belief without replacing that belief with another belief. So belief is not actually a thing that is not there. What is there is only a believer. And believer thinks that he believes in something, so he separates the two. And that's a very comforting thing for one who says that I believe in this, I believe in that. So the belief is the most important thing. If the belief comes to an end, the you as you know yourself and the you as you experience yourself also comes to an end. What you will be left with is anybody's guess, and you have no way of finding out what you are left with it, but you just leave that alone to function with an extraordinary intelligence, alertness, alacrity, and you are not any more interested in forcing yourself to fit into a value system. At the same time, you do not become a rebel. You are not even a rebel without a cause. You are not a revolutionary. You are not any of those things. You are not in conflict with the society you are functioning in. Then it is possible for us to function sanely and intelligently.
This sort of anarchic description you have just given, do you call it enlightenment? Would you like to term it as enlightenment?
I wouldn't use any of those names to describe.
Is it a vacuum? What is it then?
If you say it's a vacuum, it ceases to be a vacuum. If you say it is anarchy, anarchy, if I may define it in my own particular and peculiar way, is a state of being and not a state of being. An anarchist, if there is one in this world, he never destroys anything. Because if he tries to destroy the world around him, he is also destroying himself.
Mm-hmm.
So anarchy is not the right word to use, but I maintain that if there is an anarchy, if there is a state of anarchy, it is a state of being and not a state of being. No action is born out of the state of anarchy. He will never be an anarchist to destroy anything, because he cannot separate himself from the world around, the life around.
Do you believe in some sort of morality? Is there any place of morality in your system of
when
thinking?
When once you are not caught up between the right and wrong, good and bad, moral and immoral.
How do you define good and bad, moral and
immoral?
They
are all definitions given to us by our culture, you see. So we are all
and
the time...
You would disregard culture, but how would you redefine them?
What is the point in redefining it? It will become another culture, and the whole cultural story will start all over again. You know, as a matter of fact, somebody asked me a question in one of those television interviews in India. How do you want us to remember you 500 years after you are gone? Why the hell do you want to remember me 500 years after I am dead and gone? If you are lucky...
No, but
burn along with this body. All the memories you have of me, that would be the luckiest thing for you and for the humanity.
That's a very large scale. What I am worried about is how a son, a mother, a father, or a brother should behave towards each other. Do you believe in some sort of social morality or not?
No, it's not a question of belief. It doesn't operate in the lives of the people. We just talk about all those things. That's all. It doesn't operate in the lives of those people.
No, if you are asking people to give away their cultural beliefs altogether, then they will be...
I am not asking them to give up their cultural beliefs. I am not asking them to do anything. I want you to understand that what you believe is not operating in your life. I found this in my own way, that the spiritual teachers and their lives could never be put together. There was a tremendous dichotomy, if I may use the Thai sound word.
Hypocrisy.
I didn't want to use the word hypocrisy. So the why is there this dichotomy in the lives of the people? What they are saying is one thing. What they are doing is totally unrelated to what they are claiming to be. So
but
there must be something wrong. This was my only obsession.
That is a reflection upon our capacity, because we always try to become ideals. We always try to follow the ideals, but we cannot, because we have human limitations.
That is true. That is the hope we have, and that is the hope created by our culture, that one day you are going to be a wonderful person. So when? So you are going to be free from all this 10 years from now, and then 20 years, then there comes a time when you die, if I may use that word. You invent a thing called reincarnation, life after death, goes on and on and on. Until then, I remain what I am.
No, but without hope, one ceases to live anyway. I mean, life becomes absolutely endless.
Not at all. Without hope, which is something extraordinary, The nature of that life is something which cannot be imaginable. It's the hope that creates the hopeless situation.
Do you in any case believe the karma theory, the cause and effective, the causality, the principle of causality?
You see, the word karma in Sanskrit means action.
Yeah.
Any action that is born out of thought is destructive.
Yeah.
Is there any action called as spontaneous action, pure action, outside the field of cause and effect, is something which you will never know. Because the thought is operating in the field of cause and effect. And it has invented that cause is the effect, effect is the cause, and all that philosophical, metaphysical discussions that go on day after day is very interesting to listen to. But the cause and effect relationship is what you are all the time trying to relate them and establish a relationship. But every event in life is an independent event. So you have to link up those two and create a story. This is me. The only way you can create the story of your own life for yourself and for others is to relate the two and tell how you can link up cause and effect relationship and tell a story about yourself and others.
No, so but it's a basic physical principle. Every action creates a reaction.
Not at all. Every event is an independent event. And we think that there cannot be any action.
There is no correlation between two events.
Each event is an independent event.
That means it's a Buddhist philosophy.
I don't know what it is. Then if there is no relationship between the two, you think that it's going to be a very chaotic way of living. I assure you that it is not going to be a chaotic
way of living. Buddhist philosophy says every moment ceases to be in itself.
But they have created a tremendous metaphysics. Don't forget that. You see, they have.
Well, that was in reaction to Indian metaphysics.
Whatever you cannot say that there is a void there, that there is a sunya there. So that is the reason why I don't accept the negative approach also. The negative approach is adopted by us because the positive approach to reach our goals has failed. So we have invented a thing called a negative approach, and the negative approach is still related to the goal. Whatever is the goal, to be in a state of sunya, to be an enlightened man, to be this, to be happy all the time. So what anybody and everybody is interested in is one basic thing, how to be happy without one moment of unhappiness. This I always repeat ad nauseam, if I may use that high-sounding phrase, and to have pleasure without pain. So every sensation has a limited life, a span of life. You see, the demand to keep that particular sensation, which you call happiness, to last longer than its natural duration of life, is the one that is causing all the unhappiness and pain. This physical body is interested in maintaining its sensitivity. The more you try to keep the sensation of pleasure or the sensation of happiness to last longer, you become an unhappy individual. So all those people are telling you, I have a way to make you feel happy forever, to have pleasure without pain. They are just kidding themselves and kidding themselves. There is no way you can be happy without one moment of unhappiness. So I tell people, I really do not know what happiness is like, so I can never, never be unhappy. People ask me, are you bored? At no time I feel that there is something more interesting, more purposeful, more meaningful to do than what I am actually doing.
And
so there
is
no such thing as a boredom at all. I am now talking. And my interest is to see that I am in no way trying to influence you or trying to change your point of view or the point of view of the people out there who are listening or not listening. So just to say things exactly the way they are, not the way I feel, not the way I think should be. So there is no point of view here. See, you know, the conversation between two persons is always to influence you to change your point of view. And I am not interested in changing your point of view, and there is no way you can change my point of view. So in most cases, the dialogues, the conversations become meaningless to me. And ultimately, in the final analysis, if I may say so, that it is a monologue.
No, but it seems you are challenging the whole
linguistic behavior in itself, if I may say so. I mean, if you talk about the modern concept of linguistic philosophy, whatever you are saying, whatever phrases you are using, have a very strong cultural and social connotation. Would you like to challenge them as well?
I am using that language of yours to point out the absurdity of the individual to use language, to use logic, to use rationality, and the knowledge he has to feel superior that he's a logical man, that he's a rational man, that he knows a lot more than I do. So that gives the feeling of goodness that you know more than I do. One basic question I had when I was a student in the university, and they were considered to be great professors, you see. I used to tell myself, you see, that fellow has read 10 books, I have read only one. So he is not honest enough, decorous enough, decent enough to admit to the students the source of his information. So why the hell do I have to listen to him? I walk out of the class, and if I'm interested in studying something, I can get the same information from the books that he's reading. So he has read 20 books, and I have read only one. He's a brilliant orator because he has practiced this art of elocution all his life. He's considered to be one of the greatest orators of our times. So how do I become the orator? Why I want to be an orator is altogether a different story. So that was all that I was interested in. What is it that he has I don't have? You know? So whatever I see here is the opposite of what I wanted to be. So this is me. And why I am not enlightened? Because you should be enlightened. You are not happy because you should be happy. And what gives me happiness? If I get what I want, I feel happy. If I don't get what I want, I am unhappy. So is there any such thing as happiness at all? If you can get whatever you want, then the question of unhappiness is not at all arising. But we have not succeeded in having one without the other. To be happy always without moment of unhappiness. So it is not a question of settling for or accepting the reality of the fact that you cannot be happy always and that you have to settle for and accept the reality that you can be happy for some time and unhappy some other time.
One basic purpose of ethics and morality is how to deal with others. How would you define that purpose?
You see, I will not do anything that will harm others because I am not separate from others.
You mean you believe in old Indian ethical saying, Atmanah Pratikulani Pareshana Samacharya?
No, I don't even know what it means. Hurting my fellow
don't
being.
Do those things to others which you do not like to be done to you.
Not at all. It is not that. You see, it physically hurts me. I am never being impressed by or affected by the psychological problems of the people. And once you are freed from the psychological input, what this is affected by is what is happening around you, the physical thing that is happening around you. If there is something that I can do to that individual who is suffering, I will do it. If I can't do like an ad dog, I go.
Whatever you are saying so far can be interpreted in terms of basic biological or scientific facts. People who or scientists who deal in biology or scientists who deal in physical science can say all these things. What special you are conveying or saying, which and what would you like to term yourself as?
Some of those scientists come to see me for their own reasons. They tell me what I am saying is true, but they want to believe that I am wrong. Another thing is, they are all theorists, but then the scientist is just a metaphysician discussing everlastingly the things which do not operate in their lives.
No, for example, you are talking about sensual stimulus, which is a physical fact.
But it is not translated into a sensual activity at all, because there is no space between the stimulus and the response. They can take me to a laboratory and do some experiments and hit me here and say this is the response, that stimulus. But actually and factually, there is no way you can separate the two things. So instead of using some metaphysical knowledge or religious stuff that is passed on to me, I use what they are telling me, but Actually, in factually, there is no space between the stimulus and response.
That means it you are saying unitary. Something more than biological facts.
I don't know. I don't play. This is what I have found. This is the way this body is functioning with an extraordinary intelligence of its own. Whether it fits into their theories or not is not my interest. It's not my concern. They can reject the whole thing and say it's absolute rubbish.
Does the world end with our body?
The word?
World.
The world doesn't exist for you even now. It is just an idea. What mm-hmm. you are trying to experience, mm-hmm. the world you are referring to, is only through the help of the knowledge that is given to us. That's all. So, you that, cannot experience...
That knowledge is false. That means the world, the idea of world is false.
Yes, I am not talking of the world as an illusion or a maya. Mm-hmm. It was not my philosopher's professors that taught me this. Maya means to measure. This was my grandmother who was practically literate that told me, look here, maya means to measure. This is the meaning of the word maya. There must be a point there, and in relationship with that you experience things, the world around you. So anything you experience from that point, is an illusion, but the world is not an illusion. If somebody comes with a gun and he wants to shoot you, what would you do? I don't know what I would do. Probably I will kill him, or I will run away, or I will do everything possible to protect myself. I cannot visualize what I would do in a given situation at all. So it does not mean that I say that the world is an illusion, but there is no way you can experience the reality of anything without using the knowledge that is given to us, either by the metaphysicians or by the scientists. We all admire the scientists because their discoveries have resulted in tremendous technology, which helps us to function in this world most comfortably. That's all that they do to us. But the same thing can be used to destroy the very thing that we are trying to protect.
Last question.
Yes, sir.
Generally, purpose of philosophy is to tell people why they should do good things, because they need to know, they need to have some sort of logic to do good things. Since we do not, you do not believe in philosophy, you do not believe in any cultural system, tell me why people should do good things.
What I don't see any adequate reason why they should do anything good, because they are only concerned about doing good things. All the time they are doing bad things. And what they are left with is this misery of wanting to do good things one time.
No, you don't want to, them to do good things or think about good
things. Because there are no good things or bad things for me. I am perfectly satisfied with the world as it is. The demand to bring about a change isn't there anymore.
However miserable it sounds.
I don't see anything miserable there. We are responsible for the misery. Individually, there isn't a damn thing, if I may use that word.
Must be something to...
Why do you say there must be something? You see, you do something. What is it that they are doing? They are talking of a new world order, the world in transition, the transition from where to
you
where.
You think this world cannot be improved at all?
Why should it be different? It can't be anything different. We being what we are, I don't see any reason, and I don't believe that the world can be anything different. It has always been the same. I once told a friend of mine, you see, we have not made any tremendous strides. We are not any more different from the caveman who used the jawbone of an ass to kill his neighbor. And now with the help of all these scientists, nuclear physicists, we have destructive weapons to destroy the whole thing that we have created with the earth.
Mr. Yuji Krishnamurti, thank you very much.
Thank you.